I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight, author of How to Fight Presidents, and for the second episode in a row, sick boy, Daniel O'Brien. Joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren, healthy boy, Bowie. Soren, say health low.
Health low, everybody. Feeling pretty good, but you know this is only going to be a short window, and then I will be sick again. I went dropped my son off at school the other day after his hand, foot, and mouth disease cured up.
Jesus.
And when I dropped him off at school, I drop him off, and there's like lines for each class where they stand out in the play area, and then they all go in together. I dropped him off in his line. We were late, so we barely made it on time. There were seven other kids. Ronan has, with him, I think maybe eight kids in his class right now, because everybody in the world is sick. Everybody was shut away for so long that their immune systems forgot how to act.
Yeah.
And now everyone is sick.
I'm worried I'm going to get my brother and sister-in-law sick tonight because they've been wanting to have me over for dinner. And I've been at, like, every day this week too sick. And just like, no, let's push it a day. And so now I'm going over there today. I wouldn't describe myself as better. I think I just lost my mind a little bit, and it's like, yeah, no, I'm still on 100%, but like, fuck it, I'm sick of being in this house. I want to go to a different house, and I guess get your whole family sick.
Do you feel? I feel like you can kind of tell when you're contagious and when you're not. When you're kind of like on the mend from something. Do you feel like you're on the mend, or
I feel like I'm on the mend, but the first part I don't think I understand. When are you supposed to not be contagious anymore? Is it just when you're on the mend?
Generally the rule. No, I think generally the rule is as you are when you're producing a ton of mucus, you are still contagious. Or if the way that the rule of thumb for schools is if your kid has not had a fever for the last 48 hours, you're allowed to go to school.
Okay. Well, I definitely...
But you don't always get a fever with
haven't symptoms. Had a fever, yeah.
Thanks to Nutrafol for supporting Quick Question. Nutrafol is physician-formulated to be 100% drug-free. They use natural medical-grade botanicals in consistently effective dosages. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com/men and entering the promo code QQ to save $15 off your first month subscription.
That's sort of where I'm at, though.
Okay, well, that's fine. I got a lot going on in my life.
That's cool. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I went camping.
Oh, let's get into it. Where'd you go?
Well, Idlewild, which is outside of, it's kind of like near Palm Springs, but way higher. It's just under 6,000 feet. And if you'll remember, Daniel, it's November. Generally what happens is when you get to that altitude in November is that you get winter storms, which means snow. And we were going to go for 2 days. We were planning in November. We planned a camping trip in November. It was not like the brightest decision I've ever made, but I was excited. I had new gear.
I love that. I love that as a follow-up. Not the brightest idea I've ever had, but I wanted to do it. It made me happy.
It was originally going to be the whole family. Gilly was still recovering from hand, foot, and mouth disease. And so it was just Ronan and me and then his buddy and their family, his friend from school. And it was fun, but oh man, was it cold. At night, it dropped down to about 35 while we were there.
Fuck.
And, you know, even when the sun sets, it's immediately the temperature drops by like 20 degrees. It never got super warm there. And I was into it. Like, I was so into how cold it was, in a way where it was like this part of me. I mean, I used to go on a lot of trips. I used to do like backpacking trips, and it would snow on us occasionally. And we're not even in tents. Like, we have tarps, a ground tarp that we're sleeping on, and then a tarp that we tie up over the top of us. And you're just trying to like stay out of the way. You have three of you sleeping underneath one, and you're just trying to keep your sleeping bag away from the drips and away from snow. And as soon as I got back into this experience, it was like, it all came rushing back. And I was like, yes, I am a woodsman. Like, this is what I was born for. My son didn't feel that as much. He really struggled with the idea of even layering clothes. Like, that was a foreign idea to him, that you would layer up, and trying to get his clothes on was confusing and hard. And I started to remember as a child that I went through a very similar thing where, like, he'd put his gloves on and would really fixate on the fact that he couldn't get hit with one glove on, trying to put the other one on. He couldn't get the elastic part over his jacket, mm-hmm. or like to fully cover himself. So he was sealed in like he was going to go deal with somebody with a virus. Like, he really wanted that done and couldn't get it. It's just like the bunching of clothing was freaking him out. And I was like, You're fine. It's just, don't worry about it. But at the same time, I'm also remembering as a kid being like, no, this is a huge deal. This is just, somebody needs to solve this. I can't do it. I have my glove is I can't use it. I can't use my own fingers. And I was like trying to be very patient with him and like solve it for him. And eventually, like, he got very into the idea of how cold it was, but it took me so long that I was like, maybe we shouldn't have gone on this trip.
Man.
Yeah.
That's rough. I'm sorry, man.
That was all right. No, I mean, we did have fun. It was a great time. And we ended up, we didn't stay the 2 days because the second day it was supposed to snow.
Yeah.
And we decided we didn't want to wake up in snow and then have to take the tent down in snow, take down camp in snow.
Yeah.
Like, all that sounds terrible. But I was really anticipating that we were very close to me being able to take my son backcountry camping. Mm-hmm. Really soon. And then this trip, I was like, oh, we should wait a little bit. I think maybe 7 is too early. I think he needs to be a little bit older.
I mean, it seems like it's got to be kind of a dream to get your kids excited about camping as early as possible and have that just be like a future recurring vacation option to you.
It is. Yeah. I love the idea of it. And they are starting to warm to the idea of it.
Good.
Gilly really likes it at this point because it's so easy for her. It's just the fun. I mean, she doesn't have to do any work. But him, I would make him help me with the tent, and he hated that. And then I made him, there's like, we had collapsible chairs. And at the end of the trip, I was like, will you take apart one of these? Because I knew that was an easy job. And he really like begrudgingly did it and hated it the whole way. And as soon as certain things would go wrong, he'd go, like it was the worst thing in the world.
That's true. I hadn't realized what it would be evolutionarily for a kid, where it's like you go camping and it's very fun, and then you get older and it's like, hey, remember camping? Now you get to do some of the hard parts as well. Now you get
it's
to
a
like
lot of
like,
work.
Like now that you've done it a few times, now you get to carry things.
Right. Yeah. And so there are certainly elements of it that he did not care for.
Yeah.
But he and his friend, we did that one little hike, and we just kind of let them do whatever they wanted on the hike. So we stopped a lot while they rock climbed and kicked rocks down hills and things like that. And he was way into all of that again. So certainly throughout the trip, we had ups and downs. But by the end, I think he came out of it being like, yes, this is fun. This is a thing I like.
Yeah, good.
Look, there are a lot of products out there that are offering hair growth. And a lot of it come with some crazy, crazy side effects and some kind of harsh medications, things you don't really want in your body. Well, you don't have to choose between better hair growth and your health. There is a holistic solution for men that promotes both healthier hair and whole body wellness. Get ahead of thinning hair with Nutrafol's whole body approach to hair growth. No drugs, no compromises. And when I say whole body, I don't mean you're going to grow a fur coat. I mean, I don't know why that would even be something that you would want. No, instead you will grow hair on top of your head, and you will continue to grow hair on top of your head with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement clinically shown to improve hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage. How does it work? That's a great question. Well, Nutrafol's hair growth nutraceuticals go beyond genetics to multi-target the root causes of thinning hair, including stress, hormones, nutrition, metabolism, just general aging, and lifestyle, and also keeps in mind your whole body health as it does it. It's physician-formulated using natural medical-grade ingredients. Nutrafol's drug-free, its patented technology provides consistent, reliable results without compromising your sexual health or your sense of equilibrium. That's right. Some of the other ones can make you dizzy. It doesn't give you headaches like some of the others. It's for your whole body. Nutrafol is also trusted and recommended by more than 3,000 top doctors. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com/men and entering promo code QQ to save $15 off your first month subscription. This is their best offer anywhere. It's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com/men, spelled Nutrafol.com/men, promo code QQ.
Well, I got some unrelated quick questions for you about pop culture, Soren. You want to get into the show?
Yeah. Let's do the show.
I'm going to ask the question first, and then I'm going to talk for a long time. It's
okay.
A two-part question for us: an artist or a band that you think will be from your lifetime that you think will be undeniable if you present them to one of your kids. 25 years from now, if you want to set them down and be like, this person kicked ass and surprised everyone when they came on the scene, and you're gonna be able to listen to it, and you're gonna understand why, even if the context has changed. Which artists you think will hold up and fill that, and which ones that seem transgressive and amazing in our lifetimes will not? And here's the context for this question: Jerry Lee Lewis, piano player. Around Elvis and Johnny Cash times, died recently, and I'm fascinated by him. Like, he is someone who completely missed me, which is odd for me as someone who is like a big piano head listening to music. I knew who he was. I knew Great Balls of Fire, and I knew that he was like a very, very good at what he did. But I didn't really know. I couldn't pick out a song of his other than Great Balls of Fire, and so I was reading a whole lot about him and like. There's no greater disconnect than reading about someone from the past and then like doing your own education on them. It was like the Vulture headline when he died was Jerry Lee Lewis was an SOB right to the end. The talented hellraiser of early rock dies at 87. And there are some quotes that I found from Rolling Stone that I liked. One was talking about him. He says, I have the devil in me, he shouted, and I'm dragging the audience to hell with me. His admirers called him affectionately the killer. Live at the Star Club Hamburg is not an album. It's a crime scene. Jerry Lee Lewis slaughters his rivals in a 13-song set that feels like one long convulsion. And there's like certainly like some of his mythology is like drug stuff and party stuff. And he was like very abusive and scary. And like by all rights seemed like a bad dude. But it's still all the stuff I'm reading is like this guy's got the devil in him. When he showed up, it was fucking crazy. People were scared of this man, the killer. And I had all this stuff in my head as I'd been reading about Jerry Lee Lewis. And then I played a song of his off Spotify. And like, it's not a new observation to be like, well, the context is so different for me now than it was for anyone who was listening to him for the first time, but it's such a funny disconnect to read all this stuff about this hellraiser of rock and roll and then to play Ooby Dooby, to just like hear that as the first thing I hear when I'm looking up Jerry Lee Lewis. And like in some mild defense of he's a very good piano player. His left hand is fucking monstrous, but there was no funnier possible song after reading these Rolling Stone and Vulture obituaries to play as your first Jerry Lee Lewis song than Ooby Dooby.
Yeah, we lack the context of pioneers, right? Because by the time a pioneer has come and gone, you now everything that they've done is well trod by everybody else.
Yeah.
So like that's the reason like Wayne's World sucks as a movie now. Or like you go back and watch Austin Powers and it's like borderline unwatchable.
Yeah.
Because at the time, like everyone was quoting these movies and then we all just beat it into the ground. But like, yeah, like these early musicians were probably doing really incredible stuff. But without any of that context, you're just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I imagine for a lot of people, this was the first time they'd heard anyone play the piano like this. And so they're so shocked and moved by that, that they, and I don't know, maybe songs were just worse back then, that they're like, yeah, this one's called Ooby Dooby. They're all pretty stupid. I don't know. Good music's not been invented yet.
When you asked me about Jerry Lee Lewis, like, I was like, I think I know. He's Great Balls of Fire guy. And so like, I went and looked up Great Balls of Fire, and like the video that I chose, all the comments are like, the chair kick is at this point. This is like the time code for the chair kick, and everyone's like, unbelievable! Like this is amazing! Like this is what music should be, and like this moment specifically is what they're calling out. And I was like, what is this? So like I go look for that moment, and it's he's like playing live, and he's doing the song. He's doing his weird faces. I don't know if that was his thing. Like he sings out of the side of his mouth for a little bit, yeah. And then out of the other side for a little bit. And then at one point he gets up to play, really like hit the piano keys, and he just scoots back from his chair and stands up. And I was like, this is, what the fuck? That was it? Like no one had ever seen someone play piano standing up before. It blew everyone's minds.
Yeah.
At some point they were like, what? You can do it. Look at the energy he's putting into it. Because until that point, I guess people were just like, nah, the song is the energy. I don't have to, there's no showmanship to it.
Yeah. But this whole experience got me thinking about like who future generations will go through this with, where they're going to read an obituary or a story about someone from my time who mm-hmm. was billed as like scary or threatening or musically dangerous in some way. And it's just not going to land. And also the opposite of that. And my first one, I think a Jerry Lee Lewis of my lifetime is going to be Eminem, which is someone whose context is super important to his music, because he was like, he is emerging after a time when like there was like manufactured moral panic about heavy metal bands with their Kiss, their Knights in Satan service, and they do this devil music, and parents were worried that it was going to turn all their kids into Satanists or whatever, and look how scary it is, that man's spitting fire, that guitar is so sharp, look at all their makeup and all their fucking stuff. And then Eminem came out with none of this pageantry, and he was much more terrifying as a guy in a white t-shirt and jeans who was talking about murdering and fights and doing drugs, and he was doing it eloquently and clearly and in a way that kids absolutely loved. And there was a million news stories about how what a threat Eminem was, and a large part of that is obviously going to be like, here is this the white face of rap who is bringing rap to places where it hadn't been previously in the suburbs. And he was singing about killing his mom, about killing his girlfriend or fiance or wife or whatever it was. And like, I was hiding the fact that I was listening to Eminem from my parents. There was some stuff where I could like, yeah, they can hear me listening to naughty punk music by Blink-182 and like some of the harder stuff that I was listening to. But Eminem was like, I have to somehow acquire this CD without my parents knowing, and I have to play it when they're not around, because this is like, this is some scary stuff. And hopefully I've convinced our audience that it was at the time dangerous and transgressive. It is something that I don't think I will be able to convince my future hypothetical children when they listen to this man with kind of a silly sounding voice, if we're going to be honest. And he will be, I will play them songs where I'm like, no, trust me, this was a big, scary guy. And it's these like very clowny songs making incredibly dated references.
Comic book references.
Yeah. And like really bright and clowny music videos where it's like, no, kid, trust me. He said he was going to... He said he was going to kill his girlfriend. He sang about it.
Yeah.
One time he came on stage in a Jason mask. You understand?
Yeah, he won an Emmy. A VMA or whatever the fuck it was. And he came on stage to get his speech out of his pocket. And when he reached his pocket, a bunch of pills came out. pills fell on the ground. We didn't know what they were. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that feels like a really good one. That feels like it would be very tough to convince kids of that. I see that.
I mean, he's a little bit dated for me now. A couple years ago, he released, I think, the Eminem double LP, whatever that was. It's the one that has Rap God on it, and it's got a bunch of... It's one of his more modern albums, and he hadn't put anything out in a while. And even listening to that, he was one of his lyrics was talking about like, "Who should I go after next? Which Jessica, Alba or Beale? Maybe I'll make one at Justin Bieber." And I was like, "I don't know, man. It's like 2016. Don't leave both of those Jessicas alone. What are you talking about?"
Yeah. I mean, he really was. And maybe that was part of the popularity too. He was a zeitgeist. Like he was so good at responding to what was, he had his finger on the pulse of culture so well for that particular time. Yeah. When you try and look back on that and you don't have the context of culture around you, it looks very silly. And for that same reason, I think that a person that we're going to look, it would be hard to convince kids was like a sexual Lothario and an amazing showman will be Prince.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's going to be because obviously the direction that culture is heading is more and more acceptance. And so also more and more people who are in your daily life who are androgynous or are their sexuality is a lot more open now. And he was acting in rebellion against the opposite of that. He was acting in rebellion to like more of a conservative idea of what sex is, of what a sexual person could be. And now you have this guy who's like 4'11", who frequently dresses kind of like a woman.
Yeah.
And plays a guitar that's a mix of a symbol for a man and a symbol for a woman. And I mean, his talent is undeniable, but the songs are all about how great he is and how good he is at sex and stuff. And I think new generations are going to see that and they're going to be like, I don't understand what this is. Like, why does anyone care about this?
Yeah, that's very, very true. I remember this is kind of similar, but I remember thinking like my generation had Britney Spears and it was like, so scandalous. She's dressed as like a schoolgirl, but hot. And then you smash forward a couple years and it's like, and I guess the heir to the Britney Spears throne is like, oh, that's Miley Cyrus. She's got her fucking tits out, just like out in the world. Never mind.
She keeps taking out her vagina during shows. Like, what? Why did we care about Britney Spears unbuttoning her pants on the front of Rolling Stone? Yeah, I think that for that, those same reasons, it's going to be really tough to convince. And part of like his sex appeal was that he was so comfortable with it and so confident with how sexual he was for also, it just didn't match his stature. It didn't match like his look. And so I think you're going to have more and more people who are like that throughout our future. And people are just much more confident in who they are and and understanding their sexuality. And they're going to look back on Prince and be like, yeah, he's just a guy. Like, what was everyone so excited about? I feel kind of that way about David Bowie as well, but he's a little more, he belongs a little more to history at this point than I think even Prince does, because he was kind of a generation before us. But David Bowie's the same way, where people I think are going to be like, okay, so he was an alien for a while? Why? We're like, well, I don't know, man, but it was creepy. It was weird at the time.
What, he made us call him what? Why did he make us call him that? Stardust?
Yeah, Ziggy Stardust. Was that supposed to be scary?
I think people would do the same thing where it's like, so then briefly he was the artist formerly known as Prince. And then I think we could, a rejoinder to that would be like, no, yeah, we also thought it was stupid at the time. No one was on board with that. We were all really unhappy.
When he died, there were a lot of really cool videos that surfaced of him kicking ass at that George Harrison concert where like the context was that he was barely invited. And then it's a bunch of great musicians all playing Still My Guitar Gently Weeps together. It sounds amazing. They're all doing their own solos and stuff. And then Prince comes out at the end and appears out of nowhere and does this, the most like face melting solo that's still perfect for the song in such a way that like it blows everybody else out of the water. And then he just takes off his guitar and throws it into the ether.
Like, that's right. It never lands. We never saw it again.
He just takes off his guitar, throws it, and then walks off stage. And like that, his, in terms of like him as a performer and him as a musician, undeniable. But in terms of him as a human that we were all so fascinated with, I think kids, they won't understand why we would, like, why did you give this guy so much attention?
Yeah. That's pretty fascinating.
I do. Another one I think of is, and maybe he's already been on the shelf a little too long. Machine Gun Kelly. I think we'll look back on Machine Gun Kelly as being somebody who's very, very silly.
Yeah. I don't mean to. I think it's really irritating when people are like proudly culturally ignorant about something, but I don't know jack about this guy. I know him as Megan Fox's husband, and I like that for Megan Fox. They seem really horny for each other. I think every generation deserves their own Angelina Jolie, Billy Bob Thornton, crazy sexual horned up energy, and they are delivering on that front. I don't know. Here's where I saw Machine Gun Kelly. I saw him in the most recent Jackass movie, eating shit and getting knocked into a pool. And I had a very intense reaction when I heard him speak and realized that he wasn't British because he just looks so British.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's just like a dude. And I don't know. I can't name a single one of his songs. I believe culturally, I understand that he did rap and pop punk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he did a song with Willow Smith.
Okay.
Willa. I just called her Willow. Willow Smith, and that's a very pop punky song, and it's kind of some dog shit. And then he also did. He had like a beef with Eminem for a while, where they were going back and forth, and I don't know why Eminem was even giving him the time of day. I guess because he just goes after, if he's willing to go after Jessica Alba, like nobody is safe.
Yeah.
but he's going after Machine Gun Kelly. Machine Gun Kelly is responding and like listening to his lyrics and listening to him rap. It's kind of embarrassing now a little bit.
Yeah.
He looks the part. He looks like he could be a Sex Pistol. Like he's got tattoos all across his body. His hair's a punk length.
he looks so much more like someone who should be famous right now than Jack Harlow, someone else whose music I've never listened to, but just like he came on my radar for hosting last week's Saturday Night Live and was like, this is someone we are excited to see move about.
It all feels very performative from him in a way where you feel like you're taking crazy pills, where you're like, does no one else see how performative this is, that this is not who this guy is? Colson Baker is his name.
Machine Gun Kelly?
Yeah.
Man. He is Coulson. Someone that just, without any context, the same way that I first saw Russell Brand, I was like, well, this man's clearly famous, right? Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to do any of this.
He couldn't walk around the world looking like this. Yes. I think maybe even within the next year, it will be thought of that way. I think Prince will take a lot longer. But I think with Prince, it will seem so common at that point that everyone will look back and be like, well, who cares? Yeah. What was he doing that was so special?
I think on the opposite end of this, an artist in my lifetime that I would be supremely confident that I could just sit my future kid down and be like, when this artist showed up, she was very cool and she sounded different. And you don't need it. Like, you will agree. She is timeless and will always be cool. And that's Alanis Morissette. I feel like I could put on Jagged Little Pill for anyone in the world at any time in human history, past or present or future. And they'd be like, I understand why this was cool. I understand why this was an exciting thing in music.
I think you can even take it a step further and say, go ahead.
No, I just said I love Alanis Morissette so much.
Oh, you love her so much.
So fucking much, yeah.
So I think you can even take it a step further and say the people who, because there are musicians who, they came out, everyone was very excited about them at the beginning, and they were so excited that it flooded the market with excitement, and everyone turned. Everyone turned on them. And Alanis Morissette sort of is that a little bit. Like everyone, that kind of like, I don't even know what to call her genre. But Fiona Apple lives in it. Tori Amos, to a certain extent, lives in it. And as soon as like she came out and it was revolutionary at the time, there was like the audience sort of turned at a certain point and like stopped liking Alanis Morissette. They started calling her shrill or like, you know, things like that. I think that then when you remove that like dip in the historical context and new people discover them, immediately they're like, this is great again. Yeah. and that's how that's how the Cars were for me. I didn't understand that the Cars at a certain point were very silly. And I was like, every single one of these songs rules.
You do now though, right?
No, I think the Cars are awesome. I think the Cars rule. I think My Best Friend's Girl is so much fun.
That's pretty sweet. That's a band that if I'm just listening to whatever random Sirius XM station, you can tell within seconds, oh, it's the Cars, even if you've never heard that song before. They have an immediate corniness to them.
Oh, I wouldn't. I think they nail what they're doing really, really well. And that's why I'm just prefacing it with the Cars, because my choice for this is somebody who is so good at like knowing exactly what her genre is, knowing exactly what her lane is, and like being just like the best at it.
Is this going to be Taylor Swift?
No.
Oh, okay.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, that's fine.
She knows how to make a fucking pop song.
She does.
Better than anybody. She's so good at it. And like, and I think that, you know, we want to hate pop. Like there's like this instinct in people to, around music, you just want to be niche. I don't know why, but like people, the idea of pop is so scary to people. The idea of like liking the same thing as a 12-year-old girl is not cool. And, but she's, it's like undeniable. Like you can't listen to, what was that first one that she had?
Call Me Maybe. Yeah.
You can't listen to that song and not be like, oh, this is a really good song. Enjoying the song.
My exposure to Carly Rae Jepsen was that song. That song was everywhere when it came out. And I didn't love it. It's like undeniably catchy, but I thought like it's not about feeling like I'm embarrassed to like a song that was written for a 12-year-old girl. I just felt like, oh, this was not written for me. I'm not the audience for this music, and that's okay. And then months or years later, Carly Rae was performing at LA Pride Festival, and my friend Ashley is an incredibly gifted singer who would tour with Carly Rae for years as one of her backup singers. And so I went to go see my friend Ashley sing backup. And as a consequence of that, saw an entire Carly Rae Jepsen concert live, and it fucking rules. It rules and it rocks. And I really go from starting out thinking like, oh, I hope I get to see Ashley for a little bit, to now it's 20 minutes in. I'm like, I hope she plays Call Me Maybe. I hope she fucking closes with it. I hope she plays it twice. I'm having the best time.
Yeah, when that song starts showing up on like classic rock or whatever the classic stations are in the future, I think people will listen to it. And like, they're going to be like, this is great. You had, this was like the music that this I can get behind. This is fun.
Yeah.
This isn't that Rage Against the Machine you tried to play for me. I didn't understand that. What were they so mad about? So Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
I got to think about that for a second. Why did you choose her over Fiona Apple? You love Fiona Apple.
I do love Fiona Apple. I think there's room for both of them, certainly. I feel like Jagged Little Pill as a start to finish album is close, if not exactly perfect, of an album. That is just like I can put that on for myself anytime, but also I feel like I would love to meet someone who's never listened to Alanis Morissette, so I could be like, oh my God, sit down and listen to this album and like go on its journey with it. And there's not a Fiona album that is in my head that does that same thing as Jagged Little Pill does.
Okay. Yeah, Jagged Little Pill was a super angry album.
Yeah.
It has like a real theme of emotion throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
But then like the later albums, I feel like are a little silly. Like that song, Thank You, I think it's catchy, but it's a little preachy.
And that is, Jagged Little Pill would run us into the one difficult contextual moment. If I'm showing that album to someone and they're like, and now
this, I know this, where you're going.
She's going down on some guy in a theater. And who's that about? I'm like, listen, this part won't make any sense.
We all dealt with this.
We're pretty sure we know who it is. And it's your opinion of Alanis is only going to drop. So I'm not going to tell you. The information's on the internet, but like, spare yourself. Pretend it was someone cool. Pretend it was Wayne Gretzky or something. Tony Hawk.
He kind of looks like Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
She has a type. It is. It was like a... we all found that out pre-internet.
Yeah.
And like it made the rounds. Like the rippling effect that had through culture was so funny. Everyone was like, what? Uncle Joey?
And there was no way around it. At the time, it was just like, no, you have to understand. This was the present.
Oh, jeez. It does feel like you could put a Machine Gun Kelly type of silhouette in that position for like the person that she's mad at and be like, yes,
yeah,
I get it. But when you find out that whole album is about Dave Coulier, it's so embarrassing for her. That would be actually, I'm actually going to look forward to telling my kids about that now.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a note for them. Yeah, I do. I mean, I can remember being on a field trip. We were taking the bus and we listened to Alanis that whole trip, like going there and coming back to this place called Mesa Verde, which is like these ancestral Pueblo ruins in Southern Colorado.
Green Table.
Yeah, exactly. And we, the whole way there and the whole way back, we just listened to Alanis Morissette and like we were so fucking into it. It was, it preceded punk for me. So it was like the most emotional music that I had heard. And I was like, yes, this makes me want to be mad.
Yeah. I do think that there's still not a ton of angry singing women. I mean, because the culture we have, I think we have a
yeah.
Yeah, we used to drown women as witches if they did math. So I understand why nobody wants to be labeled an angry woman. Possibly, I'm talking out of my ass here. But one of the reasons I think she would be so undeniable in the present or future is because there, you know, not a ton of imitators have followed her the way that a lot of other archetypes have been followed, that I could still surprise someone with like, look how confident and mad and right she is.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other artists that are doing this. Regina Spektor, I guess, is still kind of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
she's allowed to be really upset and angry in her music. But you're, yeah. I mean, you're right. It doesn't do well on like the broad spectrum for you to just make like a exclusively angry album, especially if you're a woman. Huh.
We're learning a lot today, buddy.
I'm not so happy about that. or maybe I'm just out of touch with music and now there's lots of people doing it and I just don't
know
it.
That's
maybe Billie Eilish is doing this and I have no idea.
Absolutely. The other elephant in the room right now is, as I'm saying this, I'm just like making a writing down in my notepad. Investigate Lana Del Rey. Let's see if she's doing these things that I've been talking about for 40 minutes.
Do a loop Lipa.
Oof.
Is she doing it? I'm getting that name right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really enjoying Doja Cat, Dan.
Do you listen to Doja Cat at all? I've never listened to Doja Cat, but one of my favorite activities after Halloween is going through all of the celebrity costumes. It's a very basic ass quality of mine, but like they're almost all always great. And there are a lot of things that I don't think celebrities are good at. And I think there are plenty of things that they've ruined. Halloween is for them. We should give Halloween to celebrities. They're hot and they're really creative and they spend a lot of money on their costumes and it's always a blast. And just going through one of the roundups of celebrity costumes and it was, this is Doja Cat. She went as Doja Bat. And it's just like her, but dressed as a bat.
Oh,
I'm like,
great.
I like her. I don't know a thing about her, but if I'm a celebrity and my name is Doja Cat and I go as Doja Bat for Halloween, that's fun. That's the right thing to do. Good job. Is her music good?
Yeah, it is. It is really good. She's got a song called Best Friend that you should listen to. It's wonderful. Okay. And then she's also got another song called Go to Town, which I found to be very catchy. So catchy, in fact, that I was like, oh, this is going on one of my mixes. So it starts showing up on my Spotify a lot. And then I'm listening to it in the car with my kids and realizing that the entire song is just about like, go down on me, like just eat my vagina is basically the theme of the song. And I was like, maybe I'll save this for when they're a little older. Just don't want to deal with the questions about it right now. Yeah, but she might be one as well. She might be one that I was like, early on, I was like, who is this? I'd found out about her, and this is embarrassing. I threw the Hulu show Dave. Like, she had existed for so long before that point. And then saw her in that, and I was like, well, who is this? And I started listening to her music, and I was like, she's undeniable. She's great.
Yeah.
Love her.
You're better at listening to new music than I am, I think, generally, if that's not clear on this podcast, right? Opened with Ooby Dooby.
You do kind of steer clear of it. You don't like really seek it out, I found.
I do like Billie Eilish. A lot of the, I think it's similar to you where like, I'm not listening to a current top 40 radio station. I'm not listening to what is happening in music. So the things that come on my radar happen because of like the Spotify algorithm or a YouTube algorithm or there's a bass player on YouTube I like a whole lot called Julia. She is under the handle Julia Grooves. And she does a lot of bass covers. She posts like a new bass cover once a month where she puts her own spin on something. And that's the first time I heard Billie Eilish was through her channel doing a cover of Therefore I Am. And I was like, this bass line is great. And also, this song's kind of good, you guys.
I did find a number of songs early on through Puddle's Pity Party. Do you remember that clown that would sing like covers of songs?
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, this is nice. What is this song? And then go actually like seek it out. So that's embarrassing. But yeah,
it's Billie Eilish. I wonder if she's like a new discovery of she's singing the next Bond theme. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. I don't think I could tell anyone about this person.
There's that humiliating moment. I listen to music at the gym that's not my music because whatever they're playing over the loudspeakers is what I hear. And then at like Target and stuff. Occasionally I'll hear a song at Target and I'll be like, this rules. What is this? Yeah. It's like, I'll ask Siri and like, she'll listen to it and then she'll find it for me. And then I'm like, ah, I'll go find it on Spotify. And as soon as I do that, it's got 14 billion listens. And I'm like, oh, this has been out for a while. People know about this.
That's smart of you to ask Siri. I would just think like how humiliating it would be to ask a Target employee. Excuse me. You there, sir. Who is this? Doja Cat. Thank you.
Doja. Okay. I frequently do that. If I ever hear song, because I so regularly, I just want something new. I just need new music in my, I'm doing making dinner or whatever. And I'm like, I'm sick of everything. I want something new. And so I will have these songs kind of like stored up that I heard somewhere and I liked in the moment and then completely forgot about it. And so it's brand new again, but I know that I'm going to enjoy it. Oh, that's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. Man, someone reached out to me with a song recommendation based on astute listening to this podcast. And I have to also imagine every time I've ever, without explanation, tweeted a song that I liked as just like the music I'm listening to this morning. Someone with like the accuracy of a finely tuned Spotify algorithm reached out to me, a stranger, to be like, hey, I think you will like this song by a band called Bug Hunter. I forget exactly. McCracken. The name is McCracken. That song, Bug Hunter. And it was like dead on target for a song that I would like because mm-hmm. it's a song I already found and did like. So like you blew it.
Oh.
But you're not getting any credit for this. But like you are correct.
Yeah.
Just too slow.
Did you mention Ben Rector earlier as a piano artist who you don't listen to?
Maybe.
Oh, that's a guy that like he feels like he's right up your alley. He's modern, but he's also a heavy, like very keyboard forward songs.
Yeah.
Ben Rector. He's got a song called Old Friends that I think you would like.
All right. I will check it out.
And if even one other person says that to Daniel, by the way, he will never listen to the song. So just shut the fuck up, everybody else.
We're so
don't
close.
Don't second it.
Soren is taking advantage of the fact that I'm sick and my head's not thinking straight.
Yeah, we're in very dangerous territory here. It's been recommended once to him. Mm-hmm. It cannot come up again. Well, I'm done talking to you, I think, for the night. You can follow us on Twitter at @DOB_Inc, me at Soren_LTD for, I would assume, a limited time. I don't know how long we'll be on there. And you can follow Quick Question at @QQ_Soren and Dan. You can also email us. And this is going to be important because at some point we will be virtually unreachable if Twitter dies. If you need to, tell us about it's something.
Like very weirdly, this podcast will end up being the best way to keep up with me and my work because I don't, Instagram is not like for getting the word out for me or popularity or growth. I refuse to learn TikTok, even though I'm assured that it's the right thing to do. So I think if Twitter goes away and you want to know what I'm up to, it's gotta be this fucking podcast, I guess. Woof. Yeah.
Well, you can email the podcast at qqwithsorenanddaniel@gmail.com.
Yeah, if I go off Twitter, email the podcast once a week, ask me what I'm up to. Someone will tell you what I'm working on.
Someone. We have to find someone for it. Gabe Harder is our sound engineer, producer, editor. We have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/quickquestion. And that theme song that you heard at the beginning of this episode was by Me Rex. And you can find their music anywhere you listen to music, but also at merex.bandcamp.com. That's it.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
I've got a quick question for you. All right. I want to hear your thoughts. I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you. All right. The answer's not important. I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite? How did you get? If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time, yeah.